fantastic.
So good evening, everybody, and welcome to another teleseminar with the Accidental Salesman. Tonight, I'm delighted to have with me Tom Evans, who's also known as the Bookwright, and he's going to help us to write a killer blog. Good evening, Tom.
Good evening, Richard, and honoured to be here.
Excellent. Well, before we get started, perhaps you can get me a little bit about your background and how you became an expert on blogging and indeed writing.
Well, I don't actually think I'm an expert on blogging. I think I'm just a blogger who goes about it with gay abandon and seems to get good results. And I think what's good about blogging is that it's such an open field that just with one or two guidelines, everybody can become a so-called expert within just a few days, which is fantastic. But my background actually is technical. I'm an ex-BBC broadcast engineer. I spent 20 years in the broadcast industry. And I transferred over to the internet for 10 years. And in my mid-40s, I got pretty bored with sort of working in corporate environment, my midlife crisis, and I decided to write a book. So I wrote a book. It came out as an e-book first, and then it came out as an audio book, and then it came out as a printed book. And people started to approach me saying, Tom, I'd like to write a book too. Could you give me some help? So I started helping people. Before I knew it, my writing of a book made me make a career change from a fairly bored IT consultant to being an author's mentor. And since then, I've started specializing in helping people with writer's block and what have you. And so basically, the Bookwright site is the outward face of the work that I do as a book mentor. So it'd be no surprise that the sort of things that I write about are things that are interesting for authors and for publishers, and specifically topics that help people that might be stuck. And that's why, and in that way, my website actually reflects my direction from a business perspective.
Okay, well, I suppose some people will be already very knowledgeable about blogs, and some people might just be curious and listening in. So I suppose we ought to start with a silly question. But one that may be important to some people. Can you clarify what we mean by a blog and why should people be blogging?
Okay, well, blog stands is a contraction of web log. And they started maybe, about 8 or 9 years ago, and they were largely people's sort of, if you like, diary or journal about what they were thinking or what they were doing. So blogs are great, for example, if you're doing a trip to the North Pole or something like that, and you you blog your whereabouts and your trials and tribulations with pictures from your 3G phone or something like that, assuming you can get signal up there, or your satellite phone, I should say. So they're great for that sort of thing. But what's happened is the technology behind blogs, which is known as RSS or really simple syndication, has made them really useful for a whole raft of other applications. And the software behind blogs, like WordPress or TypePad or Blogger, allows you to edit effectively your own web pages. So the most savvy people that have got blogs now use them actually to as their content management systems for their websites, which means you haven't got to rely on people that know HTML and things like that. You can just upload your own content. And just to reemphasize that, one of my favorite client at the moment is an 80-year-old, that's 80. He's on his third book already, and he's blogging like a good one. So if he can do it, everybody can. Mm.
And the accidentalsalesman.com is actually a blog. It's a WordPress blog.
Yeah.
I'm just about to relaunch my new website as a blog as well. But
Blogs are technology as opposed to an application.
Yes. Yeah. So, Tom, just to get started then, what makes a good blog?
I think it's got to be a blog that people read. So, because you can write a blog about how clever you are, but if no one reads it, then, all it is an exercise on how clever you are. So writing a blog that people read, that engages with the reader, is, in my opinion, what a good blog is. And to write a good blog, that people say you've only got about 5 seconds to get somebody on, if someone's interest on the internet. Well, I actually think it's less than that. I think it's about 1 or 2 seconds. And if you think about maybe newspapers, for example, when you scan through a newspaper, what gets you is the title. So, you know, you get the headline, and if you like the headline, then you'll read down a little bit more. Then if you like the first paragraph, then you'll read some more. And blogs have really got to have that newspaper mentality, you know, that tabloid editors and get paid a lot more than broadsheet editors, because they write those strange headlines like Freddie Starr at my hamster and things like that. People are very memorable, and people follow. So writing, getting a good headline to start for a start is brilliant for your readers, but it's doubly brilliant for Google and the sort of things that people would be searching on.
But what makes a good headline then?
Well, something which, if you think about your readership, what would they be searching on and what would they be looking for that might attract them to your blog as opposed to all the millions of other blogs that are out there? I'll give you a good example. I wrote a blog about a week ago, just when the iPad got announced, and I wrote a blog entitled, what was it called now? Let me, iPad, 5 Killer Apps for Authors, okay? So what I'm doing is I'm writing about a technology and how it applies to my constituency of clients. And just yesterday, someone searched on that term, iPad apps for authors from the States, gave me a call and said, will you build my iPad app for me? So that's a good example of a good headline. So they were looking for somebody that did iPad apps. They were an author. They found my blog, and they said, I've just been looking for someone exactly like you. Let's do some business.
Yeah, but just be clear, you didn't have that intention when you didn't write a blog saying, I'll have someone read my blog, and then he's going to phone me up and want an app. Presumably you just wrote it because you wanted to write it.
My background intention is to do business, I'm not doing this totally for fun, although I'm very fortunate that I seem to be doing a job now that is great fun, and people seem to love parting with money to have a fun time, and which is really rewarding. But I wrote the blog mainly to give out information and to add value. So my idea is, well, if you're an author, these are the things that an iPad could be good for, and the reason you might buy an iPad and not a Kindle. So my main intention is to add value, to give interest, and to educate. And in the back of that, I know that some people will read it and they'll go and do some stuff with it, and maybe they'll work with other people or just use the information themselves. But occasionally someone's going to convert over to being a customer. I certainly was really surprised that I got a direct phone call on the back of it, you know, not an email even.
Yeah, you're actually, by blogging and writing blogs that are topical and what people are looking for,
yes,
you're being found and you're being recognised as an expert. So that's the idea, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. And then, but what's really key is to put a layer of topicality into it all. And that's where the sort of serendipity kicks in.
Okay. So what you're saying basically is a good headline is essential, and a good headline ought to be around what people are searching for?
Yeah. And if people are on the internet right now and you put iPad for authors into Google, just have a look at I don't come up once, I come up about three or four times. And bearing in mind there's hundreds and thousands of people writing about the iPad at the moment, and there's probably quite a few of those that are writing about it in the context of books, then, you know, it's getting on the first page, not having to pay for any clicks or anything like that, just by generating good content, to me, that's the art and science of writing a good blog.
Okay. And just to let you know, after our conversation this afternoon, I've actually written, this is going to be published tomorrow morning, iPad for sales presentation. So
perfect. Yeah.
And
you might,
okay,
and what you can
so,
do very. Yeah.
So it's going back to what makes a good blog. So you started off saying a title is important.
Yeah.
Presumably that's more to it than just the title.
Yeah, we'll start with the title. Now, the title will lead into the URL, which also gets searched on. And then we go down into the body text of the blog itself. And what you've got to then do, and where you can be very inventive, is make the first paragraph effectively a repetition of the title, so Google says, oh, this is relevant, so I like the title, I like the body text, but also to litter in there other things that people will be looking for in that first paragraph.
Mm.
And I'm a great believer in not writing really long blogs, because I think people's attention span right now is so much information being that everyone is bombarded with. So write a short blog. And you know when you scroll down on a web page, there's a thing called a fold line. And if you've got to start scrolling, you go below that fold line. And I very rarely write a blog which is longer than, let's say, a sheet of A4. And if you are to do that, then what you can do is write a summary blog. And then if you've got like 4 or 5 pages, put that into a PDF document, which is like a downloadable at the bottom for more information. So effectively what the blog does is act as a sort of, a signpost and a summary, an executive summary of what you want to talk about. But there's one absolute key thing that should be on every single blog, and that's a call to action.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
So not that you've written a blog. What would you like the client to do as a result of reading that blog? So a very simple thing to do is that if you read this blog, you might like these blogs I wrote as well. Or you might like this, or here's a link where you can go and buy your iPad, for example. Or here's a link where you can get a free ebook. Or here's a buy now button to purchase something from you. But there's always something on there which is the next thing you'd like the client to do.
Hmm. So going back to the iPad example, what was your call to action on that one?
Oh, good question. I think what I did on there was I put loads in. Yes, I put loads of call to action. So you're not limited to one. I'll have a quick look at the blog and I'll tell you. Well, actually, there's local and global calls to action. So if you look at my blog site, down the right-hand side are things like there's a picture of an iPhone, which is about an e-publishing brand that I've got called Commuter Books. There's a link to my book called Blocks. There's a link to getting a free ebook. There's a link to following me on Twitter. Mm-hmm. So every single page on my website has got what a call to action. And then here you go. Go right down to the bottom, and it says, if you want to know more about this, I'll be covering all aspects of e-publishing more on my 3-day author's retreat next week, and that's the call to action. So I'd always put something in there. Yeah. Yep.
Good. So just to summarize then, what makes a good blog? A good title, a good first paragraph, and presumably some sort of content that's not too much, but is basically down to the fold line, and some sort of call to action to get reader to do something.
That's right.
And the other thing is that the first paragraph, you said it's almost like repeating the title, but presumably it needs to be readable as opposed to just look like it's being done for search engine purposes.
Yes, exactly. And so, my first paragraph repeats the word iPad and repeats the word author. Yeah.
Okay, but in a readable way that's compelling to the reader to want to read the blog.
Exactly. And conversational. We can also write blogs in first person, second person, and third person. And so, people say to me when they read my blogs, it's exactly how I speak, so I sort of write in the same way that I speak.
Okay, so the next thing then is, we've done a great blog, how do we ensure that people actually find it and read it?
Well, the first thing you've got to bear in mind is that how do people access blogs nowadays? So you might think that most people would access the blog on a computer, and I'd say that probably still is the majority. But an increasing number of people are actually taking their blogs in a thing called an RSS reader. And that RSS reader can sit inside your email client, so it can sit inside Outlook or whatever. And it shows you can subscribe to a number of feeds that are interesting to you. And then the RSS reader will get updated. But on the RSS reader, the thing you get as a highlight is that headline. So again, that's why headlines are really important. And, of course, the growing way that people are actually reading blogs nowadays is through mobile phones, iPhones and Google Nexus and the like, and indeed the iPad and the Kindle.
So this RSS thing sounds, for some people, it might sound a bit complicated. I think when I first came across it, it sounds complicated. Can you just How do you do that, and what is it?
Okay, so from the point of view of your blog itself, all blogs are based on RSS, so you haven't got to do anything at all, right, to your blog to make it RSSable. So any blog is RSSable by its nature, yeah?
So it's a sort of summary,
It's a feed, if you like. It's like imagine your headlines. You know, you see the television and they scroll the headlines down the bottom of the news program. Imagine your blog is doing that, so it's always updating. And some people subscribe to blogs, so they get an email notification that a new blog has been posted. And if you look at the BookBrite site, right at the very top is a little orangey sort of icon with posts. Mm. And if you click on that, that will get you to subscribe. If you click on that in a reader, that will get you to subscribe to a reader. Google e-readers is one of the best ones. The RSS reader for Google is great. Or if you've got a mobile phone, there's loads of free e-readers on mobile phones as well.
So you're saying that a lot of people are reading it through through mobile phones. Are those really techie people, or is there a particular way that they find them? Because I think the real thing is how do people find your blog so that they want to subscribe to your RSS feed in the first place?
Indeed. Well, one of the good things about blogs, and certainly if you use, I use WordPress like you, Richard, is it comes with a fantastic stats engine. So what you can do is you can see where people are coming from to find you. So if I look at my stats for today, for example, a third of the people that are finding me are finding me through Twitter, which, interestingly enough, is a micro-blogging site, really. It's where you're blogging not in an article, but in 140 characters. Mm. And the rest of the links coming in are from my fans, basically, who put my blog site on their site, and they come in from that way. So, you know, you start to grow a bit of a following. Now, bearing in mind, how do you start a blog? Well, I started this blog 2 years ago, and I just maybe blog once or twice a month. I don't do any more than that. I only blog when I want to say something. And after an amount of time, this builds up without you having to do anything, which is just fantastic.
Mm. Can I just say for listeners, the in terms of how to set up a blog and so on, we do have some recordings on the site to do that, so we won't go into detail on the mechanics of actually starting off a blog and so on this evening, because I don't think we've got time to do that, but. So going back to how they find you, you're saying that they it's not just the search engines. It could be through Twitter, because you can feed out your blog to Twitter.
Yeah.
Other people can feed out your blog to Twitter as well, can't they?
That's right.
I do that for a number of different sales authors on my Twitter feed. I've got Ivan Meisner and Seth Godin and their blogs automatically feed through to my Twitter account using that RSS feed.
Yeah. And you get in that same stats package you get for WordPress, you also get the search terms people are finding you on. So three people have found me on iPad Apps for Writers today. Two people have found me on social media maps. Another person has found me on Writers Retreats Europe, which is really interesting because I don't remember writing about Writers Retreats in Europe, so even better. And so you can see the sort of things that people are looking for. And then, of course, you can write more about that particular topic.
Okay. And then presumably that will sort of strengthen the search engines and that sort of thing as well.
Exactly. And the search engines love a site that's always updating.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And incidentally, I mentioned about calls to action. You can see also in that same stats engine what people are clicking on, so you know which of your calls to action are being taken up on.
Right. Okay. So I think the we've sort of what makes a good blog, how they're going to find it. Once they find it, then we've sort of covered it already. I don't know whether we have it. How do we know then that they're actually going to read your blog? I think a lot of people suspect they sort of put in all this effort and no one actually reads it. But so how do you? What are some of the key things that you can do to ensure that people don't just read one blog but read read your blogs on an ongoing basis?
That's a very good question. Well, first is I'm a great believer in making blogs look pleasing to the eye. So you look at my site yesterday, you won't see any long blogs that just go on and on and on. They're all short and sharp. I use a lot of bullet points to summarize. I always have a picture, which is very important because I think an image says 1,000 words. Remember, a blog also can be a podcast, so you can say, listen to this teleseminar, for example, and just summarize it in one paragraph, and then you click on a button to listen to something. It can also be a video, so it doesn't just have to be text. But so long as you have appealing content, it's relevant, and it's easy to read, people, and then you also have the call to action, and the call to action can quite often be, here's another blog like this one. And so long as it's short enough, people will be encouraged then to follow it on.
So what about other people's content? Because I'm sort of told that it's good to have other people's content. Is that just to add some variety, or is it to cut down the work, or what's your views on putting other people's content on your blog?
Well, I, for example, any author I work with, I always blog their books as well as case studies, for example. So, and
but you blog their books, but do you get them to write a blog?
Yeah, often they write a case study. And obviously you can get people to comment on your blog as well, so you can have a bit of a dialogue going at the bottom of the blog where people will augment it. So, for example, if I said, here's 5 killer apps for the iPad. So I'm just going to use that as an example because it's a pretty good one. What I said at the bottom is, if you've got a killer app as well, like a 6th or 7th, please add it here. So it's not just my opinion, it's the opinion of the community, effectively.
I've got a question from David in Reading. So, good evening, David. He's working in the motor insurance, motor claims, and he's basically saying that people he's in the industry are pretty backward in terms of technology. I doubt that, but that's a perception. So how does he encourage people that aren't techie on that techie to engage with his blog?
Well, that's a good question. So maybe I ask back, David, what would be of interest to somebody that's in the motor industry? Is there something that is perhaps current or topical, or is there new legislation? Is there some information that you have, or some way that you go about it that other people don't normally do? So have you got a USP, a unique selling proposition? And I would blog about that sort of thing. So, you know, don't do a blog which is just, if you like, a brochureware website, but talk about motor insurance or be funny. You know, do the old Jasper Carrot Australian motor claims. You know, so a blog can have a different tone. So my blog is informative, and that's my tone, and that's what I'm trying to reflect in my business. But other blogs are completely humorous. So, you know, and as you know, people that sort of send email jokes around, they tend to have a completely viral nature to it. So I would say that humour in the motor industry would be something which would be absolutely, the motor insurance industry would be absolutely fantastic.
I guess that there might be a lot of people that don't go surfing for blogs, but there's things like sites like Facebook and LinkedIn where they may actually go in and keep in touch, and they may be able to find your blogs on LinkedIn or
absolutely, yeah. And don't think a blog is just the enabling technology. As far as the user's concerned, that perhaps doesn't know what a blog is, they might just see it as a website. Yeah.
Or if you use the feeding, they might actually see the link on your Facebook page or
exactly,
something like that.
Yeah, yeah. You're absolutely right. Because, you know, when I do a blog, it automatically appears on Twitter, it automatically appears on Facebook, in Inside Academy, and on a few other platforms like Technorati and StumbleUpon and that sort of thing. So one blog goes out to a number of places. And then, as I mentioned, with the stats, you can see where those how the incoming links are then reflected in where people are finding you from.
Right. So Just a quick question from Paul Payson in Arizona. Hi, Paul. Is this being recorded? Yes, it is. And you'll be able to, if you just follow the same link, you'll be able to get to the recording, and we'll keep it up for a little while.
Yep.
Now, in the sort of blurb that we sent out, we talked about the golden rule. What does that mean?
The golden ratio, I think. The golden ratio.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mentioned that it's a really good idea to have a picture. And
yeah.
Have you ever seen that picture that Leonardo da Vinci drew with the man with his arms outstretched and his legs outstretched in a circle?
Mm.
That's known as the Venturi man. And when we see somebody or something in nature which is appealing to us, it's because it actually complies with, follows along with this ratio, which I think is 1 to 1.68. And, you know, the distance between our philtrum, which is a bit just above our top lip and our nose, if that sort of adheres to that ratio, we think, oh, this person's got a pleasing face. And if their eyes are spaced at a certain ratio as well relative to the nose, we think they've got a pleasing face. And and so the same applies to blogs. So when you use when you put a picture in a blog, if you make it in ratio terms to the text, about, let's say, about, as a rule of thumb, about a third, it tends to look pleasing. And if the text for the first paragraph sort of is about the same length as the picture, so it's the same height as the picture, it looks nice and balanced. Now, graphic designers do this as a matter of course. And, of course, if we're doing our own blogs, we're becoming our own graphic designers, so we're in charge of layout. So doing a blog which has got an appealing layout is another way of attracting people to read more. And if it's got spelling mistakes in it, or it just sort of doesn't scroll nicely or look good, people will go and click somewhere else. So the golden ratio is really important. It's important in the ratio of text to image, and also in the ratio between the paragraphs as they go down the page as well. So you notice in my blogs that there's always at some point there's a whole load of bullet points, because I don't believe people want to read swathes and swathes of text on the internet, certainly.
Just to remind the, we haven't referred to it, but just remind listeners that at the bottom right-hand corner, just below the big box saying free online sales training, there's a link, and if you click on that, you'll be able to get a copy of the some slides that sort of reinforces the what Tom's been saying.
That's right. You go to page 15. It's actually, I'm sorry, it's the Vitruvius Man, not the Venturi Man. Don't worry about that.
Right.
And page 15 of the slides is where it shows you what that looks like.
Okay. You also said about how do you produce the viral effect? Presumably, what we're talking about with the viral effect is getting people to talk about our blog and word of mouth coverage, so that we don't have to put much effort in, and you know, it's, people are talking about it all over the place.
Absolutely. Well, it's really interesting because you know, we started this this conversation, and since we've been on this teleseminar, I've gone up by about a third. I've had another third number of visitors this week. So I had about 100 visitors when we started, and I'm up to about 150 now. So just doing things like this, where you're, you know, broadcasting, is kind of good. I always Twitter my blogs, and when you get into Twitter, you'll find that people start to retweet, especially if they like the stuff that you're doing. So you know, not only do your followers on Twitter potentially see it, but the followers of other people start to see it. And quite frankly, I'd always go for a recommendation rather than a complete sales pitch. So I prefer it when people retweet. Than having to do it myself. And it just sort of gathers momentum, you know, and it's a bit of a slow, it's a slow thing, but the, as long as you write some good stuff and it's appealing to people, and obviously if it's not working, then it's not that you're doing anything wrong, it's just that you've got to do something right, if you know what I mean. So, you know, you learn from your successes as well as you learn from any lack of success.
So presumably on a lot of social networking sites, they've got, like, LinkedIn, for example, it's got a somewhere where you can put your blog. Academy, we're both members of Academy, they've got places where you can actually identify your blog and things like that. So presumably it's just putting it all over the place.
Yeah, and you can also, well, two things. One, I always, some of my blogs that I think are relevant to Academy members, I reblog them in their entirety. on Academy. Okay. There's another website called eZine Articles where you can effectively reblog, and they've just actually done a plugin for WordPress. Not quite working at the moment. It's a bit buggy. But so if you blog on your site, it will automatically post an article. And the other thing, which is kind of neat, is to become a guest blogger on other sites. So I'm a guest blogger on two other websites, one called Publishing Talk and one called Publishing Academy. And I don't blog all the same things, and sometimes I tweak the content so it's more relevant for the different sites, but essentially it's just the same blog.
And do you go to them and offer, or do you wait for them to say, Tom, I've found your blog and I think you're great?
Well, both of them asked me to be a guest blogger, which is kind of nice, really.
Okay.
Yeah, so they saw my blog and said, I like your content. Would you consider being a guest blogger for me? And the only caveat I put on it is that so long as they don't mind me, I haven't got that much time to come up with a different set of blogs for my site and their site. So long as they're happy that it's largely the same content and perhaps I just tweak it a little bit for the different audience, then I'm very happy to be a guest blogger in loads of places. And likewise, if anyone's listening, sees anything on my website, and they say, can I reblog that? Then so long as you credit me as the author, then feel free.
Mm. So I've got a techie question from from Paul Handover in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got quite a good listening from Arizona this evening.
Wonderful.
And Paul is really asking about, I guess the question is, well, he's asking about your specific blog. And you say it's on WordPress, but is it on a locally hosted WordPress, or is it on a .com or .org WordPress?
No, I'm locally hosting. Now, I recommend when you start blogging, just to start out with get a WordPress hosted one, mainly because it's free. And at any time, you can export from that into a locally hosted one. It's a great way of starting blogging. It's absolutely free, costs you nothing, and you can really learn your... learn the ropes and what have you. And the reason I host it myself is when you host it yourself, you get a wider range of themes, and my theme is very, very customizable, so it allows me to pick up my spot colors and all that sort of stuff, so it's the same branding as my books and my bookmarks. But also, what's really important, it allows you to use an unlimited number of plugins. And plugins are extensions to... the base functionality of WordPress. So if you go to my homepage and scroll to the bottom, you see this swirling cloud of tags, and that's a plugin called WP Cumulus. I've also got a plugin called WP Touch, and what WP Touch does is render the blog site perfectly into iPhones and into Google Nexus phones. So I don't have to think about how it's going to look on a phone. This plugin does it all for me, which is fantastic.
You get
plugins for e-commerce and plugins for form processing and all sorts of things.
Okay, for people not as technical listening in, the plugin is basically you get a load of free software that you download and install, and then you can add to the software with these things called plugins, and they literally do just plug into the software and make it give it extra functionality.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. Got a comment from Helen in York. Hi, Helen. She's agreeing with David that the motor industry is indeed behind for the technology, but I reckon that a lot of them will be still using Facebook to keep in touch with people. So there's that.
Thank you, Helen.
You've got there's something else that you you've got them on your slides, and you I know when we did the workshop together. You mentioned about this sort of taxonomy and things you can do with your categories and your keywords and things on your blog. Do you want to say something about that? Maybe refer to the slides.
Yeah, if you go to slide number 14, which is just before the golden ratio slide, I think I used the word blogonomy, which I just made up. But a taxonomy comes from sort of people that study genetics and evolution. And a taxonomy might be, you know, all fishes or all mammals or all dinosaurs or all mollusks and that sort of stuff. And then in the category of mammals, you'd have hamsters, dogs, cats, mice, chimpanzees, humans, and that sort of thing. And in the same way, when you grow a blog and you've been blogging for, let's say, a year or so, it can be quite hard to find old stuff, and even I don't know where I put stuff. So what you can do is you can actually put things in categories, and you can put things in multiple categories. So, for example, the iPad apps for authors would be in my category called iPhone and iPad, but it'll also be in my category for ebooks, for example. So let's say someone says to me, Tom, I'm really interested in that that iPad article, the iPhone article. I can send them a link, which is thebookwrite.com/iPhone, or let me just see if that's what the actual URL is, category iPhone hyphen iPad, and then you get all the articles that fall under that category, which is kind of handy.
So if people are interested then in particular subject areas of your blog, then that allows them to find it very easily.
And not only that, you can just subscribe on your RSS reader just to that category. Yeah?
Right.
So you're really into the iPhone and that's what you really want, then you subscribe to that one. If you're into my tips on writer's block, you just subscribe to that one, yeah? Which is kind of handy. So I haven't got to remember all my URLs and all my web addresses. I just say, okay, I know that's in that section there. I've got a section for my podcasts, which are my audios. I've got a section for podcasts, which are my videos. And I always religiously put things in there, you know, more than anything. So I remember where things are, not just clients, you know. So I have to think, well, where did I put that blog? Yeah. And then
Sorry, I was just going to say, you've also got tags.
Yeah, tags, yeah, thank you. And tags are basically keywords that relate to that article. So the iPad will have iPad as a tag, iPhone as a tag, iTunes as a tag, and what have you. And if you go to my homepage again and scroll to the bottom, you see that swirling cloud. Then each of those is a tag. Actually, each of those is a tag and a category. And you can see by the relative size of the tag what I'm writing about most. So you see writer's block is quite big. Publishing's big, creativity's big, the iPad's big, the iPhone's big, Smashwords is big. And they have a different weighting depending on how much has been spoken about. So people find things by tags, they find things by categories, they find things by searching on Google, what have you. And as a blogger, you should just be mindful of it. You know, you don't have to be too religious, but it's kind of handy. If nothing else, as I say, just for yourself, so you can remember what you blogged about a year ago.
Good. Well, the questions are coming in thick and fast. I've got some really good ones here. There was one question that I really wanted to ask you as well, which you covered on this workshop we did together, and it was, how do you decide what to write? I mean, it's you know, if you're somebody who writes a lot, then it might be easy, but mm-hmm. how do you actually come up with ideas of what to blog about?
Okay, well, as you know, as my role as an author's mentor, one of the things I do is I specialize in getting rid of writer's block. And sometimes the best way to think about something is to just have a shower or go for a walk. So, you know, we can be quite, we can plan this. But to me, the best ideas are the things that happen when I'm not thinking about it, the sort of light bulb moments and what have you. And if people scroll down to, what is it now? Let me have a look. It's page 20 on the slides. I've got a mind map there. Mind maps are sort of images and collections of words. And one of the things I do is I do an exercise where you just pull four words at random, draw a picture in the middle of a bit of paper, draw four words at random out of a book. And then what you do is you do word association. So let's say the middle thing was... motor insurance, yeah? So we're talking about motor insurance, and the word was fraud, for example, or the word was something completely different, like ship, then, you know, what other word comes to your mind in relation to motor insurance that relates to the word ship? And you just do simple word association. And if you do that several times,
It's the first thing that comes to your mind, then.
Yeah, literally the first thing that comes to mind. If you do that several times, you'll end up with loads of different associations, and it'll just take your mind into a different direction. And you go, ooh, there's a nice one I'll write about. And it takes you into a different place that you wouldn't be otherwise.
I know when I'm always on the lookout for ideas of something to blog, and sometimes I'm... get in the shops or whatever, and I'll just think, oh, that's a good idea. And sort of make a mental note of something that might be a good idea to blog about at some point.
The things that tend to work well are three things, five things, seven things, or 10 things. Yeah, you know. So let's go back to the motor insurance example. You know, the five things you should bear in mind when you take out a policy. Yeah, the seven things you should never put on your claim form. Yeah, all that sort of stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, and you can just go on and on with that. And these, of course, because you're putting a number of things on there, great commentable blogs as well. So someone says, "Oh, you thought of five things, but I've thought of a brilliant sixth thing." And then someone thinks of a brilliant seventh thing, and all of a sudden you're in a conversation. And as anyone that's in sales knows, once you get into a conversation, that's the perfect time to then talk about selling someone something.
Right. Good. Yeah. You ready for some questions?
Fire away.
Good. I'll start with Sarah Bradley in Burnham-on-Sea, Somerset. Hi, Sarah. How do you stop people copying your blog content? It's almost like, you know, so you, I think we want people to publicise our blog content, but how do you stop them stealing it and pretending it's theirs?
Okay, that's a really good question, Sarah. Well, the first is, if you go to my blog site and in the search box at the very top, if you put in the words karmic rights management, you'll see a blog I wrote about this exact subject, because people are very worried about this when they write a book as well. They're worried if they put a book out on the internet or an idea for the book on the internet on many of the social writing sites, someone might steal it. So my first recommendation is don't run the fear in the first place. If you run the fear, then it will happen. But if you don't run the fear, then it won't happen. But do what I do. I'm very happy for anyone listening to this call to take any of my content and republish it. Now, I'd be happier still if you mentioned my name at the bottom of it, and even happier still if you then put a link to my site and what have you. But to me, the more stuff that's out there, the better. If it gets attributed, even better still. But, you know, the internet is free. I guarantee I wasn't the first person to think about writing iPad X killer apps for it. Yeah, you know, other people have done that too, and I believe in sort of plagiarism. But the way it works is if you nick other people's stuff, other people will nick your stuff. If you borrow other people's stuff and then give them credits, then people will do that behaviour to you too. It takes a bit of trust, but believe me, it does work.
Yeah. So I think you're a bit more open-minded. I think most people will be quite happy for you to take the content, as long as they put a link back to their site or something like that, because it's actually helping them. But
and if someone does do it, remember, you can always comment on their blog, right? So let's say someone does do it, don't get angry. Just go, oh, thank you for republishing my blog. If anyone wants to see the original article, here's the link to it.
Okay.
Yeah?
Good.
Sort of hijacking.
And I've got a question from Tanya in London. Hi, Tanya. How do you guest blog? So she's asking, do you write a separate blog that will be posted on their site? How does guest blogging work?
So the sites I'm a guest blogger for are literally, I've got a separate access to their site, and I'll cut and paste the content from my editor into their editor. Other more sophisticated guest blogging sites take your feed in and they rebroadcast it without you doing anything. There's someone I'm having a conversation with about doing that at the moment, and that would be brilliant. But the main thing to do is to get yourself into a position where you are guest bloggable, so people like your stuff and want you to be a guest blogger. Yeah. And the only way
to do that is to come
to you. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've got a sales club for consultants on LinkedIn, and I've got several different blogs feeding automatically into there. I haven't got any coming directly into my own site, although that's an idea.
Yeah, there's a plugin for WordPress. What's it called now? It's called Syndication or something like that. Yeah, Syndication plugin. Literally that word, Syndication plugin. And it allows you to set up a feed from another blog and then reinsert it in your own blog. And what you can do as an editor, you can then have it automatically appearing or appearing with your approval and that sort of stuff. Yeah.
And presumably for that, you need to go and ask the other person first.
Exactly. So any other writers out there, that are interested in taking my feed into their blog, or anybody that's got some content they think that I should have, then get in touch with me, let's have a conversation and let's have a play.
Good. Okay, and I've got a question from Sadie Murray in, I think it's pronounced Schomburg, sounds very German, or
not
Austrian maybe. So Tom, what is your Twitter name? Tom Evans, Bookwright.
The Bookwright, yeah, so the Bookwright is my Twitter name, it's my Facebook name, it's my YouTube name, it's my blog name. And I've got a lady who just refers to me now as Mr. Bookwright. I think she's forgotten what my first name is.
But it's the Bookwright as opposed to just Bookwright, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah, the Bookwright.
Good. So Tanya's come back and said, so effectively you have the same content on two blog sites.
Yes. So there's people that know me, I work from a fairly spiritual perspective. So on my blog, I because it's my blog, anything goes. But if I'm blogging on a site which is more business-focused, then I'll cut out all of those sort of references because that's a different audience. Yeah. So you've just got to be mindful of the audience for that particular blog and then use the sort of language that type of people would use.
Okay, so I'm going to call for last questions before we wrap up. But while you're sending in any of your last questions, Tom, can you tell me a bit? You've written several books. One of the ones that I really liked was the Blocks, which was when I had a bit of a writer's block problem in writing a book, and I found it incredibly useful. Can you tell me a bit more about that? And
it's an interesting story, really, because first of all, is any blog of mine is either an idea for a book in its own right, or it's a potential chapter for another book. So after a while, certainly if you blog around a category, you can take one of your categories, and look, you turn around, you find that you've got a whole book there. So, 12 chapters, in my opinion, is a good book. And if you've done a blog a month on a certain topic, like motor insurance in the 21st century, for example, 12 things you shouldn't do, whether you're either a person that issues policies or claims on them, then you end up with a book very quickly. And I wrote, that blog I mentioned about karmic rights management? This publisher saw it, and he sent me a tweet on a Tuesday to say, I really like that blog, Tom, really good advice for people in the industry that are worried about things being stolen. And I just emailed him back saying, I've just written this book. Would you be interested in publishing it? That was on a Tuesday. And by Thursday, I had a publishing deal. So 2 days from contact with a publisher. And that was about a blog that wasn't in my book. It was just a completely different blog. So this is how you attract people, for one. And the book Blocks itself is for any writer, anyone that's in any creative industry. So it's a great read. So it tells you importantly, what stops you being creative and what sort of mental condition you might be in that stops creativity flowing and how easy it is to get out of that, whether you're a musician or an artist or a blogger or a writer. And that was a lovely book to write. I really enjoyed writing it, and I know people get some great benefit from it. And for my next book, I'm sort of semi-blogging that at the moment as well, and that will appear in a sort of similar way. So, and by blogging, you can also test out the market as well for if people like the stuff you're writing.
We had a conversation about that this afternoon about would you do a category or would you set up a separate blog if you're actually thinking about writing a book? And
I'd probably set up a different category to start with. Well, it depends. I mean, it depends. Let's say I was writing a fictional book, that might not work alongside my blog, so I might set up a separate blog for it. But, even if I can do my own self-hosted, I'd probably do that as a WordPress-hosted blog. And you can also have blogs that are private. So, for example, I had a client coming to me last July, and she'd written an autobiography, so she didn't want people to see it because it's quite a personal thing. And she'd blogged that all and kept it under password control. And then she shared it with me, and I edited the book. And by October, we had the book in print, and she'd just been approached by two literary agents about 2 weeks ago. So she's gone from blog to publishing deal within less than a year, which is fantastic.
Right. Good. Okay. And do you run, you do mentoring, you run courses, don't you, on for helping people with their writing.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I do do a couple of workshops. Do a one-day workshop on blockbusting, and I do a three-day author's retreat where people turn up with just the idea they want to write a book and leave the retreat with a book written. And next one is that's obviously up next week. But and that's the call to action on that blog, iPad 5 Killer Apps for Authors.
Right.
So yeah, and they're great fun and great networking, and I teach all the techniques about what stops creativity and what mental state you need to be in to have unlimited creativity flowing.
Okay. Do you have any freebies? Now, I think people listening like freebies.
Yep.
And,
you
like,
go to the right-hand side of my blog on the homepage, and you scroll down. Hang on, where? Well, you press to go to a blog, and you scroll down. There's a free ebook called How to Write a Great Book. So you can download that for free. It's talked about the publishing industry in the 21st century, how it's actually
wow.
slewed now in the favour of the author, which is kind of handy.
So that's on the bookwrite.com.
So
that's on the bookwrite.com.
You have to click on a blog. Click on one of the blogs, and you'll find in the right-hand side a free ebook.
Right.
I've also got some free iPhone apps as well. If anyone's got an iPhone out there, I've got a short story I wrote called Soul Wave, which is available as an iPhone app. And there's a couple of other free apps as well in there. It'd be kind of fun as well.
Hmm. If people want to contact you, can they get your details from your blog? Presumably?
Yeah, it's on the Contact Me tab right at the top, right at the blog. I think it's got my Twitter
Definitely.
Handle on there, my phone number, my email. Yep. And
Good.
My site
well,
button.
We've got no more questions coming in, so I think we'll wrap it up. And I know some people in the UK are... quite keen to listen to the debate, or maybe they're maybe they're not the political debate today. But so thank you very much, Tom, and thanks for your wisdom and your advice. And thank you everybody for participating and for all the questions. And if you're not a member of the accidentalsalesman.com, please sign up. Please go to www.theaccidentalsalesman.com. We've got 38. Recorded interviews on various different subjects, including blogging, Twitter, and so on. We've got videos, we've got ebooks, all free, and we'll also keep you informed of future teleseminars, all free and all from the Accidental Salesman. Thank you.
And thank you, Richard. Thanks, everyone, for some fantastic questions and taking some time out this evening.
Thank you. I'm just going to stop the event. And